I don't have any problem being affiliated with anything that I can share the truth. And even if people smear, try to smear, it doesn't really scare me because the truth always comes out, always.
The I Do Not Comply campaign is a movement of freedom fighters from all around the world. Men, women, black, brown, white, religious, non-believers, who share something very important, a desire to reclaim their lives and their freedoms. When it comes to unconstitutional, authoritarian measures, be brave and speak out with four simple words: I do not comply. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I just want to make a quick video today addressing the recent smear tactics that the mainstream media have been using against us here at I Do Not Comply. Recently, both the New York Times and the Washington Post have both run articles using photos from our recent rally at the CDC on March 13th to promote these articles that have nothing to do with our organization in an attempt to smear us and to connect us to white evangelical resistance and the QAnon conspiracy theory community. Both of these we have no connection to whatsoever. And in the case of the New York Times, they've already been forced, after I sent them a cease and desist letter, to issue us a retraction. In the case of the New York Times article, they used this photo of me and my colleagues at the rally where I gave a speech to the local press. Of course, that speech never aired. Also, that the speech is not quoted in this article whatsoever, but they simply used a photo of us as clickbait for this article entitled "White Evangelical Resistance is an Obstacle in the Vaccination Effort." In that article, they spoke to various people of faith and giving their perspectives on why they are reluctant to get this experimental vaccine or gene therapy or biological agent, whatever we want to call it, but it is definitely not a traditional vaccine. Later in this broadcast, I will be joined by Teresa Buechers, who is one of the people actually quoted in this article about white evangelicals, even though she is Mexican-American. So stay tuned for that. Nowhere in this article is there any mention of I Do Not Comply, the work that we do, why we were having that rally, which marked the 15 days to slow the spread anniversary, the year anniversary of that nonsense, this nonsense that we're still fighting against. So it's a very disingenuous attempt by them to paint us as crazy evangelicals. I have nothing wrong with the evangelicals or people of any faith, but our organization is nonpartisan and we are not affiliated with any religious sect. So it's a disingenuous attempt by them to group us in by race and religion, which we know are the tactics they like to use to divide people and to sow division and stoke the flames of racism and so forth. The other article was from the Washington Post. They used another photo from our rally in an article about a Facebook study on users' doubt in vaccines, finding a small group appear to play a big role in pushing the skepticism. In this article, they try to tie vaccine hesitancy to QAnon. So here we go. Facebook is conducting a vast behind-the-scenes study of doubts expressed by U.S. users about vaccines, a major project that attempts to probe and teach software to identify the medical attitudes of millions of Americans, according to the documents obtained by the Washington Post. The research is a large-scale attempt to understand the spread of ideas that contribute to vaccine hesitancy or the act of delaying or refusing a vaccination despite its availability on social media, a primary source of health information for millions of people. It shows how the company is probing even more nuanced realms of speech and illustrates how weighing free speech versus potential harm is more tenuous than ever for tech companies during a public health crisis. Yeah, that's what they sure like to hide behind, is weighing free speech versus the potential harm, because the truth is harmful, because they don't want any other perspective, any other narrative, except for the big pharma cartel and government-sponsored narrative. That article goes on to say, the research effort also discovered early evidence of significant overlap between communities that are skeptical of vaccines and those affiliated with QAnon, a quote, sprawling set of baseless claims that has radicalized its followers and has been associated with violent crimes, according to the documents. So you see what they're doing here? They're They use a photo of our rally, which was a peaceful rally that brought people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds, religious backgrounds, racial backgrounds together, all standing up against this tyranny disguised as public safety, which all of these COVID restrictions have been. And they, by using our photo and then tying it to this article about QAnon and radicalized followers and violent crimes, they're trying to infer that anybody that speaks out against the official narrative, and there's my cat, by the way, she's here to support because she's very peeved about the mainstream media too. She can't take this anymore. She won't take it lying down. Anyway, you see, they're trying to connect us to make people make this mental connection. Oh, if you're against the official narrative, you must be a radical conspiracy theorist, violent extremist. It's so disingenuous. Also, the whole Washington Post article never reaches out to us for a statement. They use a photo from our rally that we organized, that we put on, that we flew speakers from all around the country to be a part of. And they don't reach out to us for a statement because they're disingenuous hacks. And that Washington Post article, which was written by Elizabeth Dwoskin, we've now sent them a cease and desist letter. And we also sent another to the New York Times writers, Elizabeth Diaz and Ruth Graham. In the case of the New York Times article, they removed the photo and issued this retraction. An earlier photo of this article included a photograph of an anti-vaccine protest in Atlanta. Of course, they have to add more smear words and more loaded language, even in their retraction. Although some protesters carried signs featuring Bible verses, the event was organized by a group that is not religiously affiliated. They issued that retraction after I sent them the following cease and desist letter. Dear New York Times, Ms. Diaz and Ms. Graham, this is Kilgore Rand. I am the spokesperson for the nonprofit organization I Do Not Comply. We are a registered 501c3 nonprofit nonpartisan civil rights advocacy group. You recently published a photo from a rally we held at the CDC in Atlanta on March 13th, 2021. Here's a link to that article. I send them a link. Then I say, we take extreme offense to you using a photo of us in an article about, quote, white evangelicals. Our organization is not affiliated with any sect of religion. We do not endorse any organized faith. The rally on March 13th was an extremely diverse gathering of people from all races, ethnic, and religious backgrounds. And here's a photo that actually represents the turnout at that event, which I shared this photo with them. Lineup of speakers. Myself. Kevin Jenkins.
My theory is when you comply, you die. Huh? That's what you do. When you comply, you die. Do you understand that back there? When you comply, you die. Say it together. When you comply, you die.
Riza Islam. A black Muslim. I don't know how you can get further away from being a white evangelical than being a black Muslim and a nation and a member of the Nation of Islam. But maybe the New York Times can explain it to me. Then we have people that spoke that we have no religious affiliation. We have Dr. Eric Plasker, who I believe is Jewish.
We have a window of time in history where our voices matter.
We have Peggy Hall as a Christian. So it's diverse all across the board. I concluded by asking, we ask that you remove the photo from our rally and that you have included in your article about, quote, white evangelicals, end quote. And if you have any integrity as journalists, we ask that you reach out to us for a proper interview to hear our perspective on the COVID vaccine and the draconian measures that have been implemented since last March in the name of public safety. We eagerly await your response. Well, at least the New York Times did the right thing and they responded by retracting, removing our photo. It would have been better had they actually reached out for a statement, but maybe that's asking for too much from them because they're disingenuous hacks. In the case of the Washington Post, sent a similar cease and desist letter, but we have yet to hear back from them. In that, I said, we take extreme offense to you using a photo from our event in an article about QAnon, who, in your words, quote, has radicalized its followers and been associated with violent crimes. Our organization is not affiliated with QAnon in any way. We do not endorse, nor do we advocate or condone any violent behavior. So we'll see how they respond. But what's going on is the mainstream media, along with the big pharma cartel and the government, are all collaborating and colluding to make anyone who questions the official narrative of the vaccine vaccines, of the masks, of the lockdowns, all these things that really are aberrations. I mean, there have been vaccines for thousands or hundreds of years, but there have never been vaccines of this mRNA nature, these prophylactic gene therapy vaccines that don't stop transmission, don't stop infection. We have never used lockdowns before for any other pandemic throughout history. All of this is different, and they're aberrations, and we're addressing that.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
So I'm fortunate enough to actually have one of the people quoted in this New York Times article, Teresa Buchers from California, who, even though she is a Mexican-American, she was included in this smear piece on quote-unquote white evangelicals. So please welcome Teresa Buchers.
Hello.
Hey, Teresa. Thank you for joining me so we could set the record straight here. You know, like I've mentioned, my organization, photos of us have graced both the pages of the Washington Post and the New York Times in recent weeks. They were both cases. They used photos from this rally that we put on March 13th to mark the 1 year anniversary of the 15 days to slow the spread. And in both cases, they use our photo attached to articles that had nothing to do with us. Right. We're a nonpartisan organization. We're not affiliated with any religious denomination. And in the Washington Post article, they try to connect us to QAnon, which we have no affiliation with, and violent extremism. And then the New York Times article, it was all about white evangelicals, which you were included in. So first, just tell me how it came to be that you were interviewed by the Post or by the New York Times about concerning, you know, your faith, or what did you think this article was going to be about?
Well, she approached me. One of the girls I mentor gave her my number because she didn't want to be affiliated with the New York Times. And I don't have any problem being affiliated with anything that I can share the truth. And even if people try to smear, it doesn't really scare me because the truth always comes out, always. And so, so she told me the piece was about people of faith and why they're opposed to the vaccine. That's what this was going to be about. And I said, sure, I have no problem. She sent me messages through Facebook, so I have it all documented. It, I've screenshotted it. And so she called me, and we did an interview. After the interview, I let her know that I recorded the whole thing to hold her and the New York Times accountable. So I have the whole interview recorded.
Very smart. And that's something I've started doing, because they will twist and selectively edit your interviews just so they can get these little sound bites to frame it the way that they want.
Right.
So, I mean, did she give any mention that this article was going to be about white evangelicals?
No.
And they're, no.
She didn't.
Okay.
No.
And of course, that's the headline, is white evangelical resistance is obstacle in vaccination effort.
Right.
And then, and you, like you said, during the interview, she kind of acts like she's your friend and they're on the same page with you, right? Is that kind of how
I even asked, yeah, I'm sorry. I even asked her, you know, are you a believer? Because, you know, my whole life is about being a Christian and just being a follower of Jesus Christ. And my husband and I, we have seen amazing things of God, and we were urban missionaries, work with kids in gangs. We work with kids, girls who had been trafficked, teen moms. So I have a huge heart for people. That's really what my faith is about, is letting people know that they have value and that they're loved, no matter what their past is, no matter what they're presently doing. You know, I wouldn't really consider myself a church going religious person, because I feel like that doesn't really represent Jesus. And I told her that, and I let her know that, she asked me what denomination. I said, no denomination. We're actually really of the mindset that we follow the Bible, period, everything in it. You know, we have a more supernatural kind of expression, because my daughter at 3 years old was burned from her knees all the way to her head. We took her to the children's hospital, and my husband said, before we go, we're going to pray and ask God to heal her, which we did. And we saw our daughter healed before our very eyes, and she had third degree burns. So from that moment on, she's 19 now. So for the last 16 years, we've really experienced a type of faith in God that has nothing to do with religion or all this religious crap that really distorts the love and purity of who Jesus is and what the Bible talks about. And so I let her know that, because one of the things she was trying to do was attach me to groups or people or denominations, but we don't really attach ourselves to that. We just really attach ourselves to Jesus and who he is and what he represents.
Well, I will say the one quote, the first quote that you have in their article, and you can tell me if this is an accurate quote or not. It is, quote, "Fear is the motivating power behind all of this, and fear is the opposite of who God is," which I actually think there's a lot of power to that. I don't know if you actually said that to them.
No, I did. Okay. I did. I didn't say I violently oppose fear. I said I vehemently oppose fear, which, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, that's the next line is "I violently oppose fear," which, yeah. And if they misrepresented what you said to them and you have the full recording, I urge you to send them a cease and desist letter and demand a retraction, because I sent them a cease and desist email and they pulled our photo and they issued a small retraction.
That's good. I mean, if. Like, I guess from a spiritual standpoint, that can be true. Like, from a spiritual standpoint, and when we talk about things that are, there's scripture in the Bible that talks about taking things violently in the kingdom of darkness. So it's very spiritual communication, which means, like, do not allow darkness to overtake light, you know, do not allow wickedness to overcome good. And we're supposed to be really violent about it, which the church by and large in America has become very passive. So that terminology, even if they use it again, I felt like God totally protected me. It doesn't really even bother me still, because, you know, I'm going to protect my children. I'm going to protect other children. I'm going to protect freedoms, to make sure that people have an opportunity to have value and worth. When you live in fear and you're caused to be forced down and all these things that they're putting on us, these vaccine passports and restricting people from being who God created you to be, I will fight to make sure that people don't ever get in a place where they feel like they're being coerced, trafficked, you know, bullied, anything, because I feel like it's such a tactic of evil. And what is happening with a lot of this media and a lot of this liberalism, it's the whole intention is to bring people to a place where they feel like they have to depend on them for everything through fear and coercion. And to me, that's bondage, that's slavery. And so just like in our American history, we went to war and there was violence and bloodshed to make sure people were not in slavery. To me, it's no different. It's just, it's a different kind of slavery. It's not, we're forcing people to work in the fields, but it's a slavery. And like, if you don't comply, we're going to enslave you in order to make you and force you to do certain things and you don't have freedoms and rights. That's slavery.
100%. I completely agree with you. And I think that's where this vaccine passport nonsense is headed. Once they have everybody onto this digital population control grid, this platform of the vaccine passports, they can easily transition that to a social credit system, which they already have in place in China, right? So then you speak out against the government, they just seize your assets, they just dock your social credit, and then that then restricts where you're able to live, what loans you're able to get. This is full-blown slavery, enslavement of all mankind if we allow these things to take hold. So I completely agree with you there. Speaking of bullying and coercion, in that New York Times article, they reference that you were forced to quit your job at Trader Joe's when the company insisted that you wear a mask. Can you talk a little bit about that? I've had my own run-ins with Trader Joe's. I went there recently with a colleague, and here in Georgia, they'll let you in without a mask, but their policy is only one maskless person at a time if you have an exemption. So they try to single you out, and then they give you a special cart with a little red flag on it. which is, you know, and I said to him, do you just have like a little Star of David that we could wear instead? which was lost on these college age girls. They have no understanding of history, which is sadly why we're doomed to repeat it, because these people, they have dumbed down whole generations where they know nothing about our past, and they don't know about World War II. They don't know about what the Jews and other, you know, groups during that period were, face the oppression that they face. And before it got to concentration camps and gas chambers, there was the dehumanizing, there was the, you know, labeling people, there was the casting them aside, there was treating them as undesirables. And we're already kind of seeing that with those that refuse the vaccine or are skeptical of the vaccine or don't want to wear a mask, want to use our God-given and biologically given airways to breathe right. freely. So yeah, tell us about what happened with Trader Joe's and your experience sure. there.
So just before I say that though, I just want to tell you, I love the Sound of Music. And I have to say, for the first time in my life, when I watched him pull down that flag, even as an adult, like, you know, it had significance to me, but now what we watched the other day and I like was bawling because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what we're going through right now. It was super intense for me. That's a side. I just want to, cause you mentioned that it's intense that people don't understand that we're literally walking through this same history. Yeah. I started working for Trader Joe's before COVID-19. It was February, 2020. I had told them when I got hired that I needed some time off because I'd already, accepted a job in New Mexico doing some interior design. And so, it was like a 2-week job. So, I got hired there. I worked there for about a month, went to New Mexico. The day that I was trying to get on the plane was the day that President Trump made the state of emergency address on the news. They started canceling flights. I had to, you know, change my flight to get back home to California. And when I went back to work, there was masks were not required at Trader Joe's for the employees. They said you could or could not. And then it just was a slow progression. And every time we had, you know, team member meetings, I was very vocal about how it's unlawful and how, you know, this is something that is ridiculous. I was also there when there was this, our shelves were totally empty. People were hoarding stuff. And then one of the things that actually came that was revealed to me, I felt like God revealed to me was, what happened was, is when they started canceling schools, there was a lady who would drive 30 minutes to get, she would go shopping. She would get 2 shopping carts and she would come every 2 weeks to get food for her family because she homeschooled. So if you multiply that by all the kids where school was canceled and parents have to get food for their kids, the shortage, I don't really believe people were hoarding. I believe people were trying to get food for their kids that they didn't normally have to get because they were fed at school or because they're not doing sports now. And so, you know, they'd go out to eat or whatever. And so a lot of that had to do with just people having to buy more food because now their kids are home. And they're, you know, buying more snacks and all that kind of stuff. So as that progressed, you know, they did lines outside and then, you know, people with masks would, it wasn't, you know, there was a lot of people who still came into Trader Joe's without masks because it wasn't like a mandated thing yet. And it just kept getting progressively worse. And I kept speaking that, you know, I wasn't a big fan of it. I started like making, when I was working there, I made masks with like big flowers and smile and, you know, just trying to bring some kind of a, some hope, you know, and happiness to people. A lot of people were outspoken about the masks. I just told them I can't do this. It's too hard. I went to a protest May 1st and I don't know, somehow the reporter that interviewed me found out I worked at Trader Joe's and then I got pulled aside and was told, you know, you're talking to the media about Trader Joe's. That goes against our policy. And I'm like, I didn't talk to them. They just found out I worked there and they mentioned it. Because that's how the media is. They can take any bit of information. They want to tie different companies and different people because that's their job. Their job is entertainment. Their job isn't really news. Their job is to, you know, make things explosive to buy more news and buy more papers and, you know, sell ads. It's really not a media corporation. It's really an entertainment, you know, corporation that they, you know, use real life events, you know, to try to, but then they add all these different things to make it beneficial. And so I got pulled aside for that. My hours got cut after that, even though they said it's because I took time off, even though I told them I was going to take time off. And then it just progressively kept getting, for me, worse and worse. And I kept speaking out about it. And so finally I said, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I don't agree with any of this. I would rather not work here than have to deal with this because it goes against what I believe. And I'd rather be out in the streets protesting exactly what this is about, which is what I did. So I gave them my 2 weeks and I walked out the door.
Well, good for you. And I applaud your bravery. And California, I think, sometimes gets a bad reputation. People say, well, you know, everyone there is a commie or, you know, an authoritarian leftist. And they're just dealing, you know, they're either in lockstep in line or they're, you know, they're promoting these kind of tyrannical measures. But I know plenty of people in California like yourself that are fighting back. And, you know, thank you for standing up and letting your voice be heard and having, you know, the character to stand by your principles. Because I think sometimes a lot of people just accept things because they're afraid of the consequences. If I speak out, I'll lose my job. If I quit this job, I won't be able to find another one. They tell themselves these things and they choose that fear over the conviction of their principles. And so thank you for standing by your principles. And we need to see more of that bravery. Before we close, is there anything else? Is there anything you would like to say to the New York Times? And Miss Elizabeth Diaz and Ruth Graham, who put this article together?
Well, I reached out to Ruth and told her that what she said was inaccurate. I also called her out on her faith because she told me she had the same faith as me. And so I let her know that the Bible, the Old Testament says, thou shalt not lie, which she lied. And then I also said in the New Testament, it says the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And I said, when you're misrepresenting people and you're using terms like white evangelism, what you're doing is you're singling people out and you are targeting them, which is by definition, when you segregate people out, that's by definition racism. So even though a lot of people don't believe that if you have hatred towards, you know, what people consider white, which, I mean, if you live in America, there's such a diversity in people that are labeled white. The girl she called originally, the girl I mentored, she's 100% Armenian, and her country is enduring genocide again right now from the Turkish government. And so, I mean, you can't call her white evangelist at any stretch. And she's someone whose race is actually going through some of the most horrific things right now in Armenia. So if she was going to interview her, I'm sure she would be included. And so I called her out on that. And then she just said, oh, well, you know, I apologize, we'll fix it in the article. So I mean, I guess it's good that she says I'm Mexican American under white evangelism, which I feel like is hysterical, because all it does is, which exactly what I knew, which is what I trust my God to defend me, is that now you look foolish because you're saying white evangelist, but then in the article you're saying Mexican American, because at the end of the day, it's just about them trying to cover their butt, them trying to smear people, them trying to, you know, go along with this demonic, I call it a demonic agenda, which is literally from the pit of hell, which is to isolate, segregate, divide, conquer. And, you know, the sad thing is that people who buy into this, what has happened is like it breeds hate towards one another. And so, and the funny thing is, and especially in California, because California is so diverse, there's so many amazing, when you go to a lot of these events, there's so many people that are so diverse, and they're actually more outspoken than any, you know, quote unquote white person that I could possibly imagine. Like, we have MAGA Hulk out here. I don't know if you've heard of MAGA Hulk, and he's this huge, like, guy. He's black. He's a huge guy. He looks like Hulk. He calls himself MAGA Hulk, and he's super outspoken. Just because it's such a misrepresentation of people who are just freedom-loving people, when what the New York Times and other media is trying to do, because you said you yourself are not even a faith-based organization, is they're trying to target, I believe, they're trying to lump people into faith because to make us look extreme. Mm-hmm. And you know, in retrospect, I mean, like, when you look at it, of course we're going to be like, we're going to look extreme to you because we're not buying into your agenda. But just because we look extreme to you doesn't mean we're extreme. What it means is that you actually are the one who is, they're very extreme from our constitution. They're very extreme from our, you know, rights. They're super extreme. So what they do, and this is what they have been really good at, is they turn their extremism and they try to put it on other people to make them look extreme from them. But really, like, we are common with the Constitution. We are very common people, and we actually are in a line to the things that our country stands for, what people mostly want, which is, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. People really want to be just left alone, to live their life, to work, to raise their families, to believe in what they believe. I mean, I think that they try really hard to segregate Christians as hate group people because we have different beliefs. But I could say the same thing to somebody who doesn't believe what we believe, that they're hating me because of my faith, which it goes both ways, which is why we just have to come to a common ground of love and kindness, and just you believe something different than I do and vice versa. So anyway, I did make that comment to her, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and you make excellent points there. Nothing of what those of us that are challenging the mainstream narrative about COVID and pushing back on the masks and lockdowns, none of that should be extreme. You know, what we're saying is the science that existed pre-March 2020, the science of when there's a pandemic, you don't lock everybody under house arrest. You don't force everyone, even children, to cover their airways. That shouldn't be extreme. So all we want is to go back to pre-March 2020 science. Never in the history of mankind have
real science.
Real science, not the pseudoscience of masks, which there's not one RCT study that shows masks are effective. Not one. And the RCT studies, randomized control trials, that is the gold standard, verifiable scientific experimentation, and there's not one that shows masks are effective. So all we're saying is let us actually trust the science, and let us go back to, you know, hundreds of years of scientific data, and not just this insanity that has been adopted by the public health officials since last year. So nothing what we're proposing is extreme in any way, but you're right. That is what the mainstream media is trying to do, is they're trying to paint anybody that resists it or voices their dissent as being an extremist. So thank you so much, Teresa, for taking time out of your day today to join me and try to set the record straight and address these recent smear tactics by the mainstream media. Stay on here. I just want to talk to you a little bit more after we end the broadcast, but thank you once again for joining me. And is there any way that people can find you if anybody wants to like keep up with your social media or what you're doing?
I actually have a ministry called Battle Cry for Freedom, and it's basically our response to what's happening in prayer. You know, last year we went to all the as many protests as we could, whether they were BLM, Patriot, whatever, and just went there to pray, because we believe that the battle is that we're battling spiritual forces here. And so they can follow me there. I post a lot of things about what is happening and things that we see. We have Battle Cry for Freedom on, it's Battle Cry _for_freedom. And it's on Facebook and Instagram.
Fantastic. And I'll make sure to include that link in these show notes. All right. Well, thank you once again, and, stay strong and keep fighting. We appreciate your bravery, especially out there in California. So keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you.
You got it.